Hi, and welcome to Casey Close-Up for July 30th, 2017. From the show with Jen and Truda on Casey 102.1, I'm Brian Truda. Thank you for listening. Two stories today with a Casey connection. First, a high school student from Leawood is in Washington this week in the midst of all of the debate on healthcare, helping to lobby the federal government to protect funding for research on the disease she has lived with for nearly a decade. And last week, we began a series on the upcoming Head for the Cure 5K. Today, a parent's perspective on how Head for the Cure brought family and friends together after her child passed away from brain cancer. Mary Claire Halpin is a 17-year-old high school student from Leawood, Kansas. Like other girls her age, Mary Claire is active in school, sports, student council. She likes race cars. And she is one of an estimated 200,000 youths under the age of 20 in America who lives with type 1 diabetes. Mary Claire was diagnosed at the age of 8. And every year, more than 15,000 kids across the country receive the same news. Enter the JDRF, formerly known as the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation, the organization that has taken the lead in advocating for government money for research and new therapies in the hopes of finding a cure for type 1 diabetes, or T1D. JDRF was founded in 1970 in New York, and according to recent figures, currently sponsors more than $500 million worth of scientific research in over 17 countries. This week, Mary Claire joined 149 other youth delegates representing all 50 states in Washington, D.C., as part of the JDRF Children's Congress. Part of the kids' mission this week will be to meet with their local representatives and appeal for the renewal of the SDP, the Special Diabetes Program. Created by Congress in 1997, the SDP provides one-third of all federal funding for T1D research. But one part of the congressional oversight of the program calls for it to be renewed every couple of years. The SDP, as it currently stands, will expire on September 30, 2017. So Mary Claire and her counterparts will ask congressmen and women to maintain the flow of money from the federal government into this important research program. Mary Claire Halpin is our first guest on Casey Close-Up today, and we begin by asking what it actually means to live with type 1 diabetes on a day-to-day basis.
Since July 21st, 2008, the day I was diagnosed, diabetes has been a 24-hour thing for me. It never stops, and I unfortunately never get a break. And also, the new 2 days are the same, living with diabetes. So it is a big challenge. But my day kind of starts maybe in the middle of the night. I may have to get up at 3:30, 4:35 in the morning because my blood sugar is either too low or too high. So if it's high, I have to give myself an insulin dosage. Then if it's low, I sometimes have to chug an apple juice and eat ice cream. And then in the morning, I get up, and the first thing I do is test my blood sugar and kind of adjust from there, and depending on what level it is. And then I go about my day with diabetes always in the back of my mind. So whatever I do before I get in the car to drive or before I have to take a test because stress makes my blood sugar go higher, or before a big football game, I have to, when I'm watching a football game at my high school, I have to adjust my blood sugars accordingly. And every single time I eat, I have to count every single carbohydrate and dose accordingly to that. So it's always a constant balancing act because my brain has to do the job of my pancreas, unfortunately.
That's incredible. I mean, I really don't think that there are a lot of people who understand, as you say, what the lifestyle is and how this is with you every minute of every day.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a huge misunderstanding just because, I mean, I look the same as anyone else except for I have like a pump set on my arm. So people think life is very easy, and unfortunately it's not. And it also gets confused with type 2 diabetes. I always get the question like, didn't you just eat too much cake, or can't you just stop eating sugar? But that's not the case either. So it's definitely a huge misunderstanding. That's part of why I'm here in D.C. is to help educate people about what it is like to actually live with type 1 diabetes.
Absolutely. We're going to talk about that in a second, because you're part of something very special with the JDRF that we're all familiar with here. A lot of us, especially in Kansas City, I feel like they have a pretty big presence. Let's take one more step back. And can you tell me what led up to your diagnosis with type 1 diabetes, and how does one find themselves in that situation?
Well, in May of 2008, my mom started noticing kind of the symptoms. I was losing like a bunch of weight, and I was drinking a ton of water and going to the bathroom all the time. And so I went to a concert at Worlds of Fun, and I was with one of my babysitters, and I throughout the three-hour concert, I went to the bathroom 8 times. And so she was like, "Mary Claire, I understand if you're like not liking the concert, but like you need to stay here." And I was like, "Aaliyah, like I really need to go to the bathroom." And so she called my parents, and she said, "I think Mary Claire might have a kidney infection or a urinary infection, like there's something wrong." And so my dad, his dad had type 2 diabetes, and so he's always been cautious of the symptoms of type 2, which are kind of the same things as type 1. And he had ketone strips in his bathroom because he tests every single month. And he said, "Okay, Mary Claire, I need you to test for ketones." And my ketone strip came back black. And he was like, "Mary Claire, you did it wrong. The darkest is purple. It's not possible." And so I did it again, and it came back the same way. So my parents knew the whole night that I pretty much had diabetes. And so I went to St. Joe's Hospital the next day. And my two parents, who are accountants, walked in, and they said, "We think Mary Claire has diabetes." And the doctors kind of laughed in our faces, just because I was fine. Like, I was happy. I wasn't really sick. And they're two accountants. What do they know about autoimmune disease? So they tested me, and sure enough, I had type 1 diabetes, and my life changed, and it's been different ever since. So it was just kind of a combination of my dad's knowledge and the symptoms that everybody experiences, the weight loss and drinking a lot of water and going to the bathroom. So
yeah, well, I mean, again, you can't say enough about... Well, your parents' experience, but, you know, having those symptoms, and then, you know, other people might confuse that for something else, and how important it is to get checked out and to make sure that that's actually what's going on with your body. That's an incredible story.
Yeah, absolutely. It's super important that everybody knows the symptoms, because there's been little kids that have been, their symptoms have been confused with the flu, and now they have either unfortunately passed away, or they have like internal nerve damage. So it's super important that everybody knows the symptoms and everybody speaks openly about it, and people get tested once a year for it, so that we can prevent any of those really bad things that can happen.
Once again, our guest here on KC Close Up is Mary Claire Halpin. She's 17 years old. And let's talk about what you're doing now. So all of this leads up to here, where you are now going to Washington, D.C. as part of the JDRF Children's Congress to meet face-to-face with some of our senators and representatives. And, of course, healthcare, especially this week and as of late, has been a really, really big topic in Washington and across the U.S. But, Mary Claire, tell us, what is your mission in Washington, D.C., and what are you setting out to do there?
So my mission here is to tell our congressmen and women about what it's like to live with type 1 diabetes and to educate them. And then it's also to ask them to continue funding the SDP, which is the Special Diabetes Program, and ask them to continue funding that. That's $150 million a year. And so what that does for us is that allows us to continue doing research for better treatment now, and then also do studies for complications later in the future, and ultimately to find a cure for type 1 diabetes. So we're asking them to continue funding that for 3 years, and it's what's special about the SDP is it's not really a Republican or Democratic issue. It's supported by all people, just because it's a really great program, and it's separate from healthcare, and what we do is very defined. I'm really excited to be a part of that and to be able to talk to people about what it's like to live with type 1 diabetes and represent our country and the nation, and of course our Kansas that live with type 1 diabetes.
So you and you have been obviously living with this in your life for about the past 9 years now, as you've talked about, and you have gotten a chance in the past to meet some of the representatives and senators before. Are we talking Pat Roberts and Jerry Moran, people like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I've done, I'm actually really good family friends with Jerry Moran, and he's been a great supporter of me living with type 1 diabetes, and is always really open and asks a ton of questions, and so, and always very friendly and open to listening to my story and others. So I've met with him several times, and then Kevin Yoder has been especially really supportive with the Promise to Remember Me campaign, and so I've met with him, I think, two or three times, and asking him to continue funding with the SGP, and he's done amazing work and always been super supportive.
That's fantastic. That's great. Let's talk a little bit about the JDRF as well. And a lot of us here, especially at Steel City Media, are very familiar with the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. We do a lot of stuff with them as far as concerts and benefits go, different walks and 5Ks throughout the year. And you and your family, you've been very involved with the JDRF as well, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I've done a lot of JDRF walks. I unfortunately had to stop doing them a couple years ago because I ran cross country, and they were always the morning of a cross country race. But I think I'll be able to do it this year since I'm just a manager. But I've been a diabetes gala advocate for several years as well. And I've actually interned at the JDRF Kansas City chapter last summer. And so we're always trying to support JDRF in whatever we do, just because they've, over the past 9 years, I've gotten to see the technology improve and my life quality improve for sure. So we just want to give back to them in whatever we can to thank them for that.
What kind, for people who are diagnosed with type 1 diabetes now, as opposed to, say, maybe a decade ago, or I don't know how far you can, you know, talk about in your experience, but, you know, there is a different quality of life, I imagine, now from things that have come about. You've talked about having the pump and being able to live really the life of a normal teenager, and that may have been different not so long ago in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in my 9 years that I've been diagnosed, I've been able to see the just really big improvement, and especially the sensors. So I use the Dexcom sensor, and it's a wireless sensor device. So that means that it checks my blood sugars every 5 minutes throughout the day. So I only have to prick my finger twice, which is huge. In addition to that, it shows when my blood sugar is dropping or going high, so I can prevent those really extreme highs and lows. But over the last 9 years, my mom has been actually able to get my blood sugars to her phone. So like when I went to student council camp last week, she was able to wake me up in the middle of the night by calling me because she could see that my blood sugar was dropping. So that's been really awesome. And I can also get my blood sugars to my phone and my Apple Watch. So that's just great help with my management as well. And every single year we see really great advances in the research. They just came out with artificial pancreas, which merges the insulin pump to the sensor that monitors your blood sugar. So we're always advancing, and it's always becoming better and better for each and every type 1 diabetic. But, you know, I've been doing research, and in the past, you know, 20 years has been even incredible. My mom got certified to scuba dive in 1997, or actually 96, I think, and I just got certified to scuba dive last year. And she said when she was certified, diabetics couldn't scuba dive. So just the advances in what type 1 diabetics can do has been really incredible as well.
Wow, that is incredible. It's the power of an app. And truly, you know, with the cell phones and apps and everything, to be able to do that, that is really, truly incredible.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very thankful for it.
Mary Claire Halpin is our guest this morning on Casey Close Up. And tell me about your friendship now with Charlie Kimball, one of the IndyCar drivers. He ended up being kind of a mentor and kind of somebody you were able to look up to, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Charlie Kimball is one of my favorite people in the entire world. I started watching IndyCar racing when I was 9 years old because my dad just always loved it, and I sat down and fell in love with the culture of it and the history, and Danica Patrick specifically. And then in 2011, when we were watching the Indianapolis 500, we saw that Charlie was racing with type 1 diabetes. And living as a type 1 diabetic, it's incredible that he can do that just with all the stress and adrenaline, all that stuff. So the love became an obsession almost. So we met him in 2011 at the Iowa IndyCar race, and Charlie took us into the pits and showed us his car and how he's able to manage his diabetes inside and outside of the car. And he told me something that day that I'll never forget. He said that diabetes is a speed bump, not a roadblock. And so he's always inspired me to literally never let diabetes slow me down, that you can go 220 plus miles an hour with diabetes. So in May of 2012, ESPN called my dad and asked if they could do a piece on Charlie and I's friendship for the Indy 500. And after that, Charlie and I's friendship just kind of took off, and we've went around the country following Charlie, just because everybody needs that constant reminder that diabetes doesn't have to be a bad thing in your life. It can be positive. Like, sure, there is, you do have to slow down a little bit for that speed bump, but it can be a really positive thing. So Charlie has always been kind of like a big brother to me, but also just a really incredible role model.
Yeah, that is fantastic. That's well, and as a side note, the Indianapolis 500, one of the best things live I have ever been to. It is one of the greatest events of humanity that you will ever see that many people in one place at one time.
Absolutely. I can definitely agree with that statement.
Yeah, I got to go about 15 years ago, and that was pretty incredible. So, Mary Claire, what does the future hold for you? What is it that you want to do, quote unquote, when you grow up? You've already seemed to have accomplished so much, but what remains on the horizon there for you?
Well, I am passionate about a lot of things, and so I don't quite know exactly what I want to go into. I'm trying to figure that out right now in my senior year of high school, but I imagine that diabetes will have to be some part of it, or at least the skills that I've learned with having diabetes will be part of my profession. I hope to see in the future, in terms of diabetes, that we get to the point where kids don't have to teach their college roommates how to put a sensor on their butt, which I will have to do. But I just hope that we can find better and better ways that people can live with diabetes and live a happier life and not have it to be such a burden as it unfortunately has been for me at some points in my life. And I hope that one day I can see the day where I can say I used to have diabetes. I feel like that'd be the biggest accomplishment for our world and our country, and also for me. So I hope to see that in the future and to continue to see improvements in the treatments as well.
Well, there's so many avenues for you. It could be health. It could be politics. It could be a lot of things that you have exposure to now that you seem to have a lot of choices in life. And it's very interesting to know that the technology is out there to be able to help you out, and how important that is as well. So we thank you for educating a lot of us today about really what it means, to have type 1 diabetes in your life, and how that really kind of shapes the way that you live and your day and your lifestyle.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for talking to me and allowing me to have this opportunity.
Well, it's our pleasure, and that's Mary Claire Halpin. She's 17 years old from just down the road here in Leawood, Kansas. So, hey, we wish all the best to you. It's for college. What are you looking at colleges here? Are you local, or are you looking to go a little bit further away from home?
I'm actually, the number one choice right now is K-State. My mom went there, and it just kind of has a homey feel. And unfortunately, I kind of do need to be closer to home so my parents can get to me quickly if there was an emergency. So K-State, other choices are Benedictine and Arkansas. So not too far. And I love the Midwest, so I can't go too far from my home. So.
K-State. Mary Claire, we were having so much fun until then. That's, Rock Chalk Jayhawk. But that's okay. That's all right. I'll tell you what.
I apologize.
My 7-year-old absolutely loves K-State, and if only because purple is her favorite color, and she knows that I went to KU, and she grew up going to KU games. I mean, we went to football and basketball games, and yet when she discovered purple and she discovered K-State, she's all about it now. So everything in her room is Wildcats, and it just drives the dad nuts, I got to tell you.
I think I'd get along with your 7-year-old then.
Absolutely. No, and she would love you for sure. So, hey, best of luck in Washington, and go get them out there. And thank you again so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
The 15th annual Head for the Cure 5K Run Walk is approaching on August 27th, 2017 at Corporate Woods. Head for the Cure has become one of the largest events of its kind in Kansas City, not only by size, They will actually register about 5,000 runners and walkers this year, but also by strength of fundraising. Nearly $500,000 will be raised by individuals and teams this year and turned into research money for the Brain Tumor Trials Collaborative, or the BTTC, a network of leading doctors and institutions working together on research and clinical trials to help find a cure for brain cancer. This includes our very own University of Kansas Cancer Institute. Since its inception in the early 2000s, Head for the Cure has spread across the country, holding events in more than 20 cities. Collectively, the races and events from around the U.S. will surpass the $10 million mark in giving to the BTTC sometime this year or in early 2018. You can register right now, by the way, to take part in the 15th annual Head for the Cure 5K at Corporate Woods. Registration is still only $35, and you can get more info at headforthecure.org/MetroKC. You can also sign up to be part of a team. Kelly Fisher has, for the last few years, led one of the biggest teams at Head for the Cure, Team Little Owl. Last year, they had 335 members in the race. Let's meet Kelly Fisher. We'll let her tell you about her experience with Head for the Cure.
Well, my first association with Head for the Cure came really just a few weeks after my daughter had died from an inoperable brain tumor. Her name was Allie, and her nickname was Little Owl. And so in the midst of that tragedy, we were just looking for a way to help people and find a way to honor Allie's memory. So we formed a team, didn't know how much support we would get in that first year, and we were amazed by our friends and our family coming together at a time where we were most vulnerable.
It's interesting because we talked to Matt, and if anybody missed the discussion last week, of course, Head for the Cure was born out of Matt's brother, Chris, who had been diagnosed with a brain tumor in 2000 and then passed away a couple of years later. And so Matt, out of that, founded Head for the Cure as a 5K and a way to honor Chris and also to raise awareness of brain tumors and brain cancers as well. When you were going through the process, but you didn't know of Head for the Cure at the time. What did you gain out of Head for the Cure? A lot of people talk about it being kind of a family. You gain a bunch of friends. You gain a real support network. What did you guys get out of Head for the Cure in those first few months there?
I like to say that Head for the Cure was the first time that we fought back against Allie's tumor. Her tumor was inoperable, 100% fatal. There are no treatments for a child as young as three. So Head for the Cure was the first time that we said, we're not going to take this, and this wasn't right, and what can we do to turn our grief into something positive?
As the years have gone on, and what year was that you guys started with the run?
Our first year involved with Head for the Cure was 2013.
Okay. So now over the past 4 years here, as we get into this year, last year you had 335 members of Team Little Owl, and it's just grown and grown and grown. And where have these people come from? Because, I mean, you may know 335 people, I don't know, but perhaps people just get inspired by Allie's story and by wanting to make a difference and to be part of it.
Yes, and that's what I say. If you're going to survive a tragedy like this, you have to be surrounded by great people. And we have been so lucky. We have been surrounded by the very best people. And these people are our friends, our coworkers, our neighbors, our family members, and they get others involved. So a lot of my friends, their parents come. A lot of our neighbors will invite their coworkers, and it just grows from there. So it really brings a whole sense of community into the entire event.
As we discuss, and we know a lot from this show because we talk to a lot of different people who participate in 5Ks and runs and walks all across Kansas City, and they're for a lot of different organizations, and they cover a lot of different beneficiaries and whatnot. And all of them, as Matt says, they're all important. They all mean something to the people who are involved. When somebody's looking ahead for the cure and says, I may want to be a part of this, and they're hearing this now, What can you tell them about that day? We wanted to make sure, you know, it's not a gloomy day. It really is a celebration. It's a party. It's something fun. What can, in your mind and in your thoughts and words, what can somebody take out of that Sunday in August?
I really think people come and they see all of the inspiration and hope. Yes, tragedy has happened to these families and a lot of times to these participants. A lot of brain tumor survivors are out there raising awareness and funds for the cause. And you see that and you can't help but be inspired by their strength and their resolve to help others.
Well, Team Little Owl is always one of the biggest teams that we have on site ahead for the Cure Day, and I'm sure this year is going to be no different. Do you have a count this year on how many you have so far?
Yes, as of today, we are up to 184 team members.
All right, all right. So
it's incredible.
That is fantastic. With still over a month to go, so you've got plenty of time.
Yes, yes, there is still time to sign up, and I hope everybody will turn out like they have in years past.
It's going to be great. August 27th at Corporate Woods, Kelly Fisher and her experience with Head for the Cure and Team Little Owl. Kelly, thank you so much for sharing Allie's story and for telling us about your team. And we will see you here in a few weeks at Corporate Woods.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
KC Close Up is a 2017 production of Steel City Media. Past copies of the show may be found online as podcast downloads on your favorite podcasting app, on Facebook by searching for the KC1021 Facebook page, or online at KC1021.com. Issues discussed on this program may also be found in the station's public files, on hand and available for public review during normal business hours, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. weekdays, at our main studio location, 508 Westport Road, Suite 202, Kansas City, Missouri. To suggest an issue for an upcoming show, please direct email to Truta, T-R-U-T-A, at KC1021.com. For all of our Steel City Media stations, I'm Brian Truda, wishing you a great weekend. We'll see you next Sunday for another edition of KC Close Up.